Happy Mother's Day.
Blog Talk Radio.
That's your world. I just live in it.
The number you have reached, 911, has been changed to a non-published number.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Hey, good evening, everybody, and happy Mother's Day. Welcome to Feldman World Review. This is Brian Irving, your host here at Feldman World Review, and thanking you for tuning in. And there's just so much going on, like always. It's incredible. I don't know how you guys are enjoying this lockdown, but it's kind of breaking up. It's starting to come apart, which is a good thing. But here we are. It's May 10th. You know, some people are, governors are extending it into June. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. But, May 10th, it was interesting. There was three interesting birthdays today that I'll go over with real quick. John Wilkes Booth, the man that assassinated Abraham Lincoln. Mark David Chapman, shot Lennon, and Rick Santorum. I'll share this day as their birthday, which is always pretty interesting. But as the states open, as the states are opening, you see all these confrontations. We see confrontations going on with, people that they're, they're trying to get their business going and they're being stopped to shut down. Religious, churches, temples, religious organizations are trying to assemble to have services and they're getting attacked. It's, but a lot of this is like people going to the beach. They want to go to the movies, restaurants, and it deflects from what this issue is. And the issue is this: people want to go back to work because they have pride. They have pride in themselves, pride in their life. And there's a self-esteem attached to working, taking care of your families. It's they try to trivialize what people are looking for, what this opening up the economy has got to start moving. We've lost tons of wealth. It's going to take a long time to get stable where we were, where people were shopping and there were so many good things going on. Good things going on. People were employed. Even the job that I had, it ended because of coronavirus. I mean, this isn't my job. But, as citizen journalists out here, we're important. We're important because the mainstream media is never going to give us any truth. And it just goes on. I mean, with everything that's just going on this last week and this weekend, it's absolutely incredible. But the opening of the states, it's religious communities, right to assemble. It's families being able to do things together outside of the home. There's a lot more to it, and it's very important. It's very important at this end because, whether people were looking at a bad statistical model, when they started talking about when they went to President Trump and they said, hey, 2 million people are going to die if we don't mitigate. Mitigation became social distancing. It became all these different things, but ended up in lockdown where you can't leave your house, where you have the mayor of Chicago threatening people that if they go to their friend's house, they go to a relative's house, they go anywhere, that they're going to be arrested. And, and the drumbeat goes on, But have you noticed that it's always the same players all the time now? The same players, the same voices, the same talking heads, the same faces over and over again. Whether it was the Russia collusion, the Ukrainian abuse of power, or whatever they were trying to make that into. Because we all know that Hillary, Obama, and Biden all gained financially from the relationship with the Ukraine. How about the impeachment or this coronavirus response? It's the same voices. It's the same people. Pelosi, Obama, Brennan, Comey, all got something to say. They all got something to say. Obama and Brennan, doing a lot of talking. A lot of talking. They should save their energy for the potential indictments that are coming out. They should save their energy now for the for these potential indictments, possible arrests. You know, I hope they take it to that level because, you know, when you have officers, generals, leaders in the military being found guilty of the Espionage Act and going to prison and having their career destroyed, you know, Hillary's right up there, you know, with her little bathroom server that she had, trying to avoid the tracking, the tracing, the things they say to hide it. Because the government keeps good notes. We can see now all the documents that dropped last week. You know, they take pretty good notes. I mean, everybody, you know, on the left side, I'm sure they're all so paranoid of being hung out to dry that they're all just trying to do a CYA, you know, just to cover their butts by documenting what the conversations were and who said what. And look, well, I was only partially guilty. It was the other guy that did it. But it's the same faces and the same complaints and the same voices. And the haters are out in force. And they're talking a lot of crap. A lot of crap. You know? And they're talking all this crap while their coup d'etat, you know, while their attack on President Trump. And it wasn't just an attack on Trump. Because nobody hated Trump until he ran for president. Nobody hated Trump until he mocked up all of the Republican candidates on live TV. He just mopped them up. He just out-hustled all of them. You know, the haters came out when, you know, he was debating Hillary Clinton and calling her out right to her face. You know, before that, you know, he was lauded by the Jesse Jacksons and others for his involvement, you know, with black colleges. He was always getting money and funding the black colleges, but now he's a racist. It's incredible how they've been doing it, how they continue to do it. And while their coup d'etat is unraveling, they're just out there ignoring it. You know, with this whole criminal surveillance of a campaign and criminal surveillance of a sitting president. You know, They just go on like none of this really happened. They just go on. And, you know, it amazes me how they can just roll right through it. And the mainstream media, who's in their pocket, who's working with them, and, you know, they're thanking each other for doing such a great job. You know, Nancy Pelosi to some MSNBC reporters, and they're thanking each other, and they're going back and forth. You know, but this is incredible. It's incredible to me how they just are ignoring it. And that is the reason why we need indictments. We need to have, if nothing else, grand jury investigations. Set grand juries down and let them bring all the evidence to the public and put it on TV like they did the OJ trials. Put it on TV and let's watch it. Because, you know, it's got to, you know, it has to happen. But one of the problems we have is the damn Republicans. You know, I'm an independent, but I'm a conservative, an American. I consider myself to be a patriot. But the Republicans don't fight very well. I mean, we had to put up with Boehner. You know, the Tea Party movement brought Boehner in, and suddenly he became, you know, the leader in the House. And what do we get from him? Tears, excuses. They don't fight well. We need to be fighting, and it can't just be us out here. There's a lot of great people in conservative media or on the internet that are independents, that are looking for the truth, that are trying to find those truths. But the Republicans have to stand up. You know, there's a couple of them. You know, the Gates is one, Jim Jordan's one. There are people in the House and the Senate that are trying, but they can't do it alone. And we've had enough of Boehner, Paul Ryan, Mitch McConnell, Lindsey Graham, and all with the same, I'm going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to talk about this. You know, It's incredible. And I think next time something like this happens, when you're going to mitigate, you're going to shut down businesses, I think the first group that should go home is the Congress. Without pay. Without pay. They do not deserve to get paid and sit at home and eat expensive ice cream. It's absolutely ridiculous. You know, but, you know, a lot of information is coming out right now. Things that we knew were true. We knew months ago, our instincts, our experience, having followed politics for decades, having worked in political campaigns, having just read newspapers when there wasn't an internet. You knew what was going on. But they just continue the lies. They just continue the lies. And one thing I wanted to talk about is Seth Rich. So Seth Rich was working for the DNC, and he was murdered in D.C. one night out on the street in 2016. And they said it was a robbery. You know, the D.C. police said it was a robbery. But he didn't have anything stolen from him. His wallet, he had his cell phone, he had his jewelry, I guess a watch and whatever else he had. And he was shot dead. But Joe Hoft, Gateway pundit, he said that following last week's release of all these documents, Attorney Clevenger alleges the office of the DNI has communications between Seth Rich and WikiLeaks. Okay, which immediately says to you, well, guess what? The whole Russian hoax was a lie. You know, and they've been going on and on about this stuff. Now, WikiLeaks did release DNC emails related to John Podesta, Hillary Clinton's campaign manager, in the months before the 2016 presidential election, which showed massive corruption combined with the elitist attitude from members of the Hillary Clinton team, all willing to do whatever it took to win the election. The emails were very revealing, but the mainstream media chose not to share the damaging and corrupt information because they were all behind Hillary winning. You know, but then last Friday, after years of being hidden by corrupt, lying Representative Adam Schiff, a number of testimonies related to the Russia collusion sham were unveiled after Schiff received pressure from Richard Grenell, thank you, Mr. Grenell, the acting director of the National Intelligence, the ADNI. One transcript was from CrowdStrike's Sean Henry, who stated under oath that CrowdStrike had no evidence that Russia even exfiltrated the emails from DNC. The whole Russia stole the DNC emails and sent them to WikiLeaks stories of fraud, which leads us to now. Many people suspected that in 2016, a young man working for the DNC by the name of Seth Rich copied emails from the DNC and shared them with WikiLeaks. Mr. Rich was murdered in D.C. in July 2016. You know, but his wallet, his phone, his watch, everything was on him. We reported numerous oddities, and a lot of us out here did. We just couldn't believe it. In fact, on my Facebook page, on my Twitter page, I have pics of Seth Rich there because this has disturbed me from the beginning. Disturbed me. But for years, Seth Rich's story has been covered up and labeled a conspiracy. That's us. We're the conspiracy theorists. Even though the coup d'etat is coming to light, we're still conspiracy theorists. Like, it's going to go away. Now, Judicial Watch released documents obtained in an FOIA request. Excuse me. These emails revealed that corrupt cops Peter Strzok and Jonathan Maffa were copied in an email regarding a report from the Daily Mail where ex-Brit Craig Murray claimed he traveled to D.C. and obtained Clinton emails in a wooded area near American University. The Mueller gang never looked into Seth Rich's matter at all. They never interviewed Julian Assange from WikiLeaks to determine who provided him the DNC emails, which were reportedly the cause of the Russian collusion. And in a prior related subject, it's been detailed that many actions taken over the past few years to determine Seth Rich was the one who provided WikiLeaks. Well, these transcripts of conversations between Papadopoulos and confidential informant believed to be Stiff and Halper were released to the DOJ. This transcript confirms that Papadopoulos was spied on and recorded. Two things Papadopoulos was not told at the time of the case made against him by the Mueller gang. But maybe the truth about Seth Rich will come out now. because they've been hiding it for a long time because they used it. Everything that happened, they tried to turn it around and twist it on the Republicans, on the conservatives, onto the Trump campaign, and really trying to destroy Trump. You know, and they're still out there. They're still out there criticizing his response to the coronavirus. They're out there talking their crap. And Barack Obama came out and he said that AG Barr's actions and all these other actions are a threat to the rule of law. Well, what does this guy really think about the rule of law? He abused it. He abused the Constitution. He attacked the Constitution. And Joel Pollack for Breitbart wrote a story where he said that former President Barack Obama warned Friday that the rule of law is at risk. But former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn will no longer be prosecuted. But come on, he was set up. It was like back in the old days, you know, entrapment. You know, you'd get entrapped and then they'd throw it out of court because you were entrapped because – you know, the people doing the investigation were not being straight up. Now, Obama's remarks leaked from a private conversation call with members of something called the Obama Alumni Association show a breathtaking lack of self-awareness. Obama himself was the threat to the rule of law, both during his presidency and as it ended. Now, as Breitbart News has previously noted, Obama routinely violated the Constitution's separation of powers, challenging America's constitutional foundation in a way no president before him had done in peacetime. Quote, remember this line, "I've got a pen, I've got a phone," Obama said, threatening to use and abuse his executive power rather than allow the constitutional process of legislation to proceed. And here are some of Obama's more egregious violations. Refusing to submit the Iran deal to the Senate for ratification. That's a clear violation. He declared the Senate in recess when it was not, which was struck down later in a 9-0 Supreme Court decision. Defying the courts when he told to renew oil and gas activity in the Gulf of Mexico or to stop giving amnesty to illegal aliens. He threatened the Supreme Court after Citizens United and before the Obamacare decision. Altering Obamacare's statutory deadline unilaterally, just on his own. He says, well, okay, it's not ready yet. In fact, he kept pushing it off past the 2012 election because he didn't want the facts to come out because they would definitely look bad on him. He created the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, the DACA, and Deferred Action for Parents of Americans, the DAPA, programs after admitting it was unconstitutional. He admitted it. And he tried to wipe out the coal industry. Now, moreover, the Flynn investigation itself undermined the rule of law by targeting a man the government knew was innocent of any crime. Similarly, Obama's own effort to protect Hillary Clinton and his administration's attempt to undermine Trump through false allegations of Russian collusion also violated the rule of law. And last week it emerged it was Obama himself who told then-Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates about Flynn's lawful conversation with the Russian ambassador, which set investigation wheels rolling. Obama's phony protest suggests he is feeling desperate as attention turns, finally, to his role in the affair. And I think Pollack hit it on the head. He really hit it on the head. And Obama, you know, has to be called out on it. He really should turn in his Nobel Peace Prize because I don't know what he brought. He brought, you know, horror to the United States, horror. I mean, he fanned racial tension. He fanned all kinds of tension between the Islamists. You know, he and Hillary Clinton put the Muslim Brotherhood into power in Egypt after Barack had kept the Muslim Brotherhood under control after they assassinated Anwar Sadat. So, you know, it's incredible. But, you know, now the other guy that keeps talking, sort of, he can't form a sentence. He seems totally incoherent. It's very sad. It's really sad. You know, if we weren't coming into this election season, it would really, I'd be more sensitive. But Joe Biden, I mean, you talk about a grifter. You talk about a scam artist. This guy's never done anything. He got caught for plagiarizing, had to drop out of another presidential race. He's got a hands problem, touching women all the time. you know. But the fact of the matter is that Daniel Greenfield from Front Page, he clearly defined the fact that Biden sold out America to China while working for Hollywood. And Greenfield points out that outside, he tells a story, and it's outside the JW Marriott in Los Angeles, Reverend Eddie Perez Romero was being handcuffed by the LAPD. Reverend Romero was holding up a free China sign outside a Chinese Ministry of Commerce conference. Inside was the LAPD's boss, Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa, along with Governor Jerry Brown, remember Moonbeam, and Vice President Joe Biden, who were palling around with China's future dictator, Xi Jinping. Quote, "My hope is that Vice President Joseph Biden, Governor Jerry Brown, and Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa will rise above any pandering spirit, but his true statement intentionally blur the artificial line between the economy and human rights," Reverend Romero said. Biden, though, had a very different agenda on his mind. Now, this happened in 2012, okay, 8 years ago, and Joe was thinking about his future. A year earlier, his best friend, Senator Chris Dodd, had left the Senate to run the MPAA. The MPAA was Hollywood's trade association and movie and the movie industry, reading its own writing on the wall, wanted into China and was willing to sell its soul to make a deal. Biden wanted Hollywood cash for a future presidential campaign. Dodd had been one of the sleaziest figures in the Senate, even by the low standards of the era, eager to do favors for, well, any well-heeled industry, from finance to entertainment. His friendship with Biden gave him a direct pipeline into the Obama administration, and Dodd gave Biden a pipeline into Hollywood. Quote, "Joe was our champion inside the White House," Dodd later said. Now, 2 years later, in 2014, Biden began to address the MPAA by joking, quote, "There have been the rumors all those years when Chris and I served in the Senate that although I was chairman, he controlled me." "Well, just given new life to those rumors," he continued, describing how he had left a meeting with Obama and Chancellor Merkel, telling Obama that he had to address the MPAA. Quote, "There is no question that you've got the right guy with the right influence," Biden concluded. And that's exactly what Biden has been proving in Los Angeles as he surrounded Xi with Hollywood tycoons, especially Jeffrey Katzenberg, a major donor to his 2020 campaign. And he cut a deal with the Chinese thug to increase the quota of Hollywood movies allowed in by the Chinese communist regime. Quote, "Some of you were there. Literally, by the end of that lunch, we had a handshake," Biden boasted to the MPAA. The next year, the number of blockbuster foreign films showing in China had increased by over half, and our share of box office revenue has doubled. Or your share of the box office revenue has doubled. Keep in mind, for Chris assisted later, that was a Freudian slip before, because he did get the money. So did Hollywood, but he got a lot of money, Biden. Now, Biden, understandably, we lost track of the difference between your share and our share, because Hollywood has been reliable fundraising machine for Biden. What was good for Hollywood was also good for Biden. Katzenberg got Oriental DreamWorks, a $330 million joint venture with the PRC, and eventually hosted Biden's first Southern California fundraiser, which brought in $700,000. 2012 was a big year for the adulterous nuptials of Hollywood and the Chinese Communist Party. Now, a few months after the meeting between Biden and Xi, China's Wanda Group bought AMC Theaters for $2.6 billion. The Wanda Group, run by a billionaire communist oligarch with close ties to regime officials, is working on a communist theme park, and its investors allegedly include Xi's sister. Beyond just owning the theaters, Wanda owns the Legendary Group, which has had a hand in a long list of movies from Spike Lee's Black Klansman to Pokemon, along with the King Kong and Jurassic Park sequels. The only reason Hollywood movies can play in China is because the communist leadership directly profits from them and controls what goes into them, either directly through ownership or by forcing the industry to submit scripts for the approval of its communist censors. HUAC would be superfluous today. The big studios who make up the MPAA are all working for communists, and they're proud of it. I hear Joe McCarthy somewhere. Wait a minute. Anyway, that's why a Tibetan character vanished from Doctor Strange. Disney had been a worst offender when it comes to appeasing the communist leadership. Why Taiwanese and Japanese flag patches vanished from Tom Cruise's jacket in the Top Gun sequel. The movie was backed by Tencent, the PRC social media monopoly, which whose social media controls allow the regime to censor dissident, and which has its paws on Wonder Woman, Venom, and many other blockbusters. And why World War Z erased references to China covering up the origin of a zombie outbreak? The act of censorship now appears prophetic. Biden's brokering of the relationship between Hollywood and the communist elite was more than financial, it was also cultural. Hollywood treated access for control, not just over what Chinese people saw, but what Americans were likely to see. Biden's donors got richer, and American movies were reduced to a bunch of CG cartoons with limited dialogue that had to win communist approval. And it wasn't just Hollywood. In 2013, a year after G event at the Marriott, Joe and Hunter Biden flew on Air Force 2 to China. BHR Partners was founded that year and included Hunter Biden as a board member, which I understand he was supposed to sign away from, and I think he still is. Underneath all the rhetoric about ennobling virtues of globalism was some parochial and familiar profiteering. So, you know, here he is. He's running for president. Hollywood's behind him. Now we know why. Now we know why. But as the documents come out about the collusion, about the coup d'etat by the National Socialist Democrat Party, it's incredible. Now, Adam Schiff, you know, they were having that battle. Grinnell came out, right, and threatened Schiff that he was going to release the 53 pages, the 53 documents. Well, Schiff made it impossible for the DOJ to declassify the transcripts on the Russia investigation. As reported by Greg Jarrett, in 2008, the House Intelligence Committee forged a rare bipartisan moment. Its Republican and Democrat members voted to make public the transcripts of 53 witnesses in the Russia collusion investigation. John Solomon's Just the News reminds us, however, that that act of transparency has been aggressively thwarted by Adam Schiff. Representative Adam Schiff, a Democrat from California, took over as chairman of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, the HPSCI, sounds like something from a TV show, from Republican Devin Nunes in 2019, which we should have never lost the House. Damn it. Anyway, it was then that Schiff deployed his disgraceful strategy. Schiff sent a letter to the office of then-Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats, which Just the News has obtained. In the letter, Schiff ordered that the witness transcripts, some of which contained exculpatory evidence for President Trump's team, not be shared with Trump or White House lawyers, even if the declassification process required such sharing. The letter is dated March 26, 2019. Under no circumstances shall ODNI or any other element of the intelligence community share any HPSCI transcripts with the White House, President Trump, or any persons associated with the White House. This is so partisan. It's so straightly partisan. But, you know, Adam Schiff lied over and over again, lied about the investigation, and the media just let him get away with it, like they always let these guys, they've been letting these people get away with it. You know, and I just, you know, they're still talking crap. You know, it was reported in the Post, Lee Smith's article said that last week, acting director of National Intelligence Grinnell forced Democrat Congressman Schiff's hand. If the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee didn't release the transcripts, he was going to release them. So they came through, and now they're ready for public viewing. And they've actually been ready since June. Now, as the grand impresario of collusion, Schiff has filled print and broadcast media since January 2017, claiming he has seen, quote, more than circumstantial evidence, unquote, of a Trump-Putin conspiracy. Obviously, there was none in the transcripts, or he'd have pulled back the curtain years ago. But Schiff didn't want to hand control of the narrative to one of Trump's most effective deputies. So on Thursday, they finally went live. They show exactly what you would expect them to show. None of the former Obama administration's officials who took to the airwaves immediately after Trump's election to claim collusion had any evidence of it. Here's Obama's Director of National Intelligence and CNN analyst, James Clapper. Oh, Clapper, Brandon Comey, these guys got to go. Quote, I never saw any direct empirical evidence of the Trump campaign or someone in it was plotting, conspiring with the Russians to meddle in the election. It's incredible. Former Pentagon official and now candidate for the New York 17th Congressional District, please don't vote, Evelyn Farkas. Okay. She claimed in a notorious 2017 MSNBC segment that she advised her colleague to the Senate. It's funny how the media people are running for Democrat offices. I mean, it started out with like Clinton's people, all like Stephanopoulos, all infiltrating the media. But now they're going back and forth, right? But she advised colleagues to disseminate intelligence so that Trump would not destroy evidence of collusion. Under oath, however, she testified she didn't know anything about Trump staff dealing with the Russians, right? Now, another thing that came out with these declassified documents, they show that John Kerry's State Department spread the Russia collusion narrative. You know, Greg Jarrett summed it up by saying that documents released last week by the Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Lindsey Graham gave insight into a bombshell revelation about the role of John Kerry's State Department in fueling the FBI's dubious Russian collusion probe, showing it was the State Department that provided information leading to the controversial surveillance of Carter Page. And that was reported by Breitbart. Now, amongst the redactions released are parts of the Obama administration's FISA warrant applications used to spy on Page. And Breitbart reported that the disclosures of the text claimed Page was an agent of a foreign power and that the status of the target was determined in or about October 2016 from information provided by the U.S. Department of State. Newly released information also highlight how the FBI, run by James Comey at the time, heavily relied on the Christopher Steele dossier as proof of Russian collusion. Of course, the collusion was debunked, and the nonsensical Steele dossier was paid for by Hillary Clinton and the 2016 presidential campaign and the DNC. The State Department's accusation that Page was a Russian agent raises questions in light of the previous reporting, exposing connections on the spreading the dossier claims between elements of Kerry's State Department and Steele, as well as ties to longtime Clinton confidant Sidney Blumenthal and Cody Shearer, who is a controversial figure long tied to various Clinton scandals. You know, John Kerry's chief of staff at the State Department, John Finer, was also instrumental in distributing the dossier. This is incredible, right? When Finer received a summary of the dossier, although it was questionable, he shared it with John Kerry. Finer had received a dossier summary from the Obama State Department official, Jonathan M. Weiner, who acknowledged regularly interfacing and exchanging information with Steele. But, you know, Kerry should be prosecuted. One thing he should be prosecuted for, these illegal Iran meetings that he was going there, undermining the president. The president is negotiating with Iran. The president is negotiating with China. He's negotiating with Russia. Three of the biggest threats, that's the new axis of evil, the three biggest threats on the planet. And you got Kerry, you got Obama, and you've got dozens of others from these administrations, from the Clinton and from the Obama administrations, going to the leaders of these countries and saying, don't listen to Trump. Just wait it out. Wait till after the 2020 election. We get rid of him. We'll bury him. We'll destroy him. You know, well, Kerry, come on. He should be prosecuted for that. He should be prosecuted for that. I mean, if other people had been doing any of this stuff, they'd be prosecuted for this. But Kerry did violate the law. Now, clearly and apparently quite proudly, given the dodgy past of the Logan Act, even conservative Republican Tom Cotton calls it a stupid dead-letter law that any prosecution would likely result with nothing happening. Still, we think Kerry crossed the serious red line. Americans should recognize that he would put nuclear weapons in the hands of Iranian mullahs. These are the ones who routinely lead and encourage chants of death to America. And don't forget, Iran's theocratic regime is the world's number one supporter of terrorism. I've been saying that for years and years and years, whether it's Hezbollah or Hamas or Boko Haram in Africa or al-Shabaab. Iranian money is there. And then another name that came up that we hadn't seen for a while, Alexander Vidman. Do you remember him? He was the big guy that was going to bring Trump down. I'm sorry. I don't have COVID, by the way. Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vidman admitted he made up elements of the President Donald Trump's call with the Ukrainian President Zelensky in an official summary. Prior to the call, Vidman included a discussion about corruption in the talking points provided to the president, but Trump did not use them in the call. The summary Vidman wrote after the call read, President Trump underscored the unwavering support of the United States for Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity within its international recognized borders, and expressed his commitment to work together with President-elect Zelensky and the Ukrainian people to implement reforms that strengthen democracy, increase prosperity, and root out corruption. But Vidman clarified during his testimony that the president did not bring up the topic rooting out corruption during the phone call, but he included it in his summary of the call. The information is just pouring out. The coup d'etat has been exposed. It's been totally exposed. And you know, these people have been colluding with Russia, with China, the Democrat Party, okay, Biden, Obama, Pelosi. And I swear, you know, Nancy Pelosi's son, Paul, also was made. It wasn't just Hunter Biden, but also John Kerry's stepson, Hines, and Nancy Pelosi's son, Paul, are all reaping the benefits of these relationships with Ukraine, with Russia, with China, you know. But it's just, it's sad. And you know, at least Cruz came out too, Ted Cruz, who I was originally supporting in the last election. And boy, am I glad Trump won. Trump's got big cojones to put up with what he's putting up with. But Texas Republican Ted Cruz has been on a tear lately about how the United States has worked with China in the past and how it ought to be adjusting that relationship post-pandemic. One of his favorite targets has been the Hollywood film industry, which we just went over. But he came out and said it too. Now, in Breaking News Daily, it was reported that a GOP rep has been saying that Pelosi's blocking the investigation into the Wuhan lab funding. You know, now House Speaker Nancy Pelosi made it clear she's going to work very hard to pin the coronavirus pandemic on President Donald Trump. Just don't ask her to find out where the pandemic actually started. Pelosi, as you may have heard, has put together a committee to oversee the Trump administration's handling of the COVID-19 crisis. COVID-19 is a marketing term, by the way. It's SARS coronavirus 2 is what it actually is. I believe it's a modified virus. In a Dear Colleague letter, she assured everyone this was about ensuring the relief money was spent the way it was supposed to, which she said, quote, "We must make sure that the historic investment of taxpayer dollars made in the CARES Act is being used wisely." And yeah, like they gave it to the Kennedy Center. You remember that? And then the Kennedy Center laid off all the musicians. "Used efficiently to those in need, not to be exploited by profiteers and price gougers," Pelosi wrote in a letter late last month, according to Politico. However, you can probably tell where this whole thing is headed when you consider that each of the 7 members she appointed to the committee were Democrats. The chairman, meanwhile, will be House Majority Whip James Clyburn, the South Carolina Democrat, best known as the man who pretty much saved Joe Biden's campaign by endorsing him before the South Carolina primary in February. No conflict of interest there. Just don't ask Pelosi to join an investigation of the origins of the novel coronavirus. According to GOP Rep. Guy Raschfaller of Pennsylvania, his attempts to investigate a New York firm that sent money to the Wuhan Institute of Virology, potentially the source of the virus, according to some sources, which I believe, have been stymied by Pelosi and House Democrats. Now, during an appearance on Breitbart News Saturday this weekend, Reischenthaler talked about a letter he sent to Secretary of Defense Mark Esper regarding a Pentagon grant that went to the EcoHealth Alliance, which has given money to the Wuhan Institute on a number of occasions. It's unclear whether the Pentagon grant went directly to the Wuhan Institute. Another grant he talked about involved the National Institutes of Health, in particular the National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Diseases, Dr. Fauci, which gave money to the Echo Health Alliance, which in turn gave that money to the Wuhan. They know how to launder funds, don't they? They really know how to try to launder and wipe these funds clean. But Pelosi's blocking the investigation. She's also, some people got paid, some PPP loans went out late, some unemployment went out late because of Pelosi. She has slowed the process down for no reason. And I just rue the day that we lost the House. You know, it's incredible. But you know, I think Vindman's going to be I think there's going to be a lot of cleaning out in the next couple of months, how these people got other jobs. I'm sure they have contracts. You know, they let the government get unionized, guys. So, you know, you got union, you can't fire them. It's like a teacher's union. You know, you can't fire them. You know, you got to give them an opportunity to earn money somewhere else, I suppose. But this coronavirus thing came, and they went to the president, and they said, we got to shut it down. 2 million people are going to die. And it just doesn't look that way, does it? Well, White House advisor Kudlow, he says that the U.S. should wait before passing any new coronavirus aid bill. And in the position I'm in, you know, I could use that. I could use another, check. But, you know, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi wants Congress to pass additional relief measures. And from Alex Nitzberg, he wrote that the White House economic advisor, Larry Kudlow, on Sunday said that while the administration is not currently engaged in formal negotiations over a new coronavirus-related legislative package, he and a colleague are speaking with bipartisan groups of legislators regarding future steps. Quote, "It's not that we're not talking. We are," Kudlow said on ABC this week. "It's just informal at this stage." Now, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi called for her colleagues to approve a new round of legislation amid the pandemic. But Kudlow suggested that there should be time available to gauge the effect that existing measures have had on the nation's economy. Speaker Pelosi wants a large package, larger than, I think, Biden and Pelosi both said it's going to be bigger than the last package. We're so far in debt right now, it's mind-boggling. But she wants a larger package, which would include financial assistance for both governments and individuals, and probably criminal legal aliens and a little money for the Chinese, you know, to make them feel better about being accused of releasing the virus. Now, quote, it must provide strong support for our heroes with robust state, local, and territorial tribal governments on the front lines of this crisis who desperately need funds to pay healthcare workers, police, fire, transportation, EMS, teachers, and other vital workers who keep us safe. You know, they always tell you they're doing it for your own good, but it never is for your own good. And this whole thing has hurt so many people, you know, and I can say that it's hurt me. But the narrative, you know, they keep blaming Trump. Trump was too slow. Trump was too late. Trump did this. Trump did that. The Obama administration, after 8 years, okay, left the reserves, left the ventilator storage, the PPE storage. They did not reorder the supplies, you know, after the H1N1 came rolling through. But the ventilators are killing people. So all that crap Cuomo was talking about was pretty bad. But, you know, I got to tell you, my Heroes and Zeros segment today, it entails a whole bunch of governors. A whole bunch of governors. And here are some heroes. Governor Noem. She's the governor of South Dakota. She avoided the lockdown. They've had hardly any problems. She's opened up the government. She's a hero. Governor DeSantis. I live in Florida now. I did live in New Jersey. Kind of glad I'm not there right now. So I'm living in Florida. DeSantis did a great job protecting the elderly. He did a great job, you know, protecting the elderly. He sent people into the nursing homes, and he secured them so people couldn't go in and out, so you couldn't send people there. Now, Cuomo may have had a hand in killing thousands and thousands of elderly people by sending coronavirus-infected people into these nursing homes. You know, there was no separation. But Governor DeSantis has done a great job with that. The amount of people that have died in this state is under 2,000 still, and it's going to I think it'll remain that way. Governor Greg Abbott in Texas, another state with the low numbers, okay, because their response was to go after the most vulnerable, which was the elderly, people that were really sick, and they isolated these people and protected them. Look what happened in the Democrat-controlled Northeast. I mean, you take away New York City, and our percentage drops like a stone. I mean, you look at the numbers. Governor Brian Kemp, remember, he's going to open Georgia. Oh, they're all going to die. Everyone's going to die because they keep pushing the fear. That's what they're trying to do. They just want to push and spread fear. These governors are spreading hope. Governor Noem, DeSantis, Greg Abbott, Brian Kemp of Georgia, and Mississippi Governor Reeves. They're spreading hope that the future is there, that you're back, you can work, you can get your self-esteem back, you can get your job back, you can start working, taking care of your family. It's very important. But the big narrative fail with Georgia, 15 days after the lockdown eased, Georgia sees the lowest day of COVID hospitalizations. It was reported on the Daily Wire. Republican Governor Brian Kemp of Georgia celebrated the state's lowest number of hospitals. Now, that doesn't mean that there might be spikes here and there, because we know what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a very intense virus. But we're Americans, for God's sakes. We're not cower in our closet. But anyway, Republican Governor Brian Kemp of Georgia celebrated the state's lowest number of hospitalized novel coronavirus patients and the fewest number of COVID-19 patients on ventilators on Saturday, 15 days since the Republican loosened lockdown restrictions in the face of persistent attacks from the mainstream media and the public disapproval of Donald Trump. Respiratory symptoms of COVID-19, quote, typically appear in an average of 5 to 6 days after exposure, but may appear as few as 2 days and as long as 14 days after exposure, per the U.S. Center of Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, which I don't know if UC San Diego Health notes. Now, today marks the lowest number of COVID-19 positive patients currently hospitalized statewide, 1,203, since hospitals began reporting this data on April 8th. Kemp posted to Twitter on Saturday, today also marks the lowest total of ventilators in use, 897, with 1,945 available. We'll win this fight together. And they're bringing hope. But then there's the governors on the other side that are just spreading fear. They must be enjoying their little, they can play Fuhrer, state Fuhrer for a while. Governor Whitmer in Michigan. Governor J.B. Pritzker in Illinois, Cuomo, oh my God, what a mess he created in New York, and Governor Murphy. I mean, those states are just disasters. You know, when I talk about a disaster, those states are disasters. But the truth of the matter is, the economy's just starting to click a little bit. Last Monday, my wife and I went to the Jacksonville Beach and walked out on the beach, and it wasn't crowded. There wasn't a lot of people there, but it was beautiful, and it was empty, and it was just absolutely beautiful, and it's psychologically uplifting. But, the coronavirus scare, there's a lot of scams going on out there. You should watch out for these scams. But one of the scams is being perpetrated by Ilhan Omar, the Islamist pro-Al-Qaeda congresswoman from Minnesota, where she got caught raising money for a Minnesota food store and then keeping the cash. How do you like that? This is the wonderful Ilhan Omar. And, again, Gateway Pundit reported that Jim Hoff reported it this way. He said she's only been in Congress for one term, and already this woman has been caught in numerous scandals, including immigration fraud, marrying her brother, and funneling money into her lover's consulting firm. Now we can add one more crime. Ilhan Omar asked for donations this week to help feed Minnesota food store. And she tweeted, as Minnesota's struggle with hunger, I'm partnering with MNF Food Share and other local groups that pack and deliver meals to students and families. Chip in $5 today to power their efforts to keep our communities fed. And she's got a little picture here with the donate, and it might even look like her, like shoveling some food into a tray. But Ilian's tweet was removed by the director of the organization that runs the Minnesota Food Store who tweeted out a reply. I am the executive director of GMCC, Minnesota Food Share is our program. Ilian Omar has nothing to do with this project. I don't know where the money is going. But see, that's the progressive national socialist for you. You know, they just don't care. And they haven't cared for years. They really haven't, you know. And they've really hurt the American people in a lot of ways by all these lies, the Russia collusion, the Ukrainian abuse of power, the impeachment, the coronavirus response, and the big threat. And I don't blame Trump for reacting, because when two of the top doctors, or considered top doctors of infectious disease in your country, and you have them on your group, you know, they come to you and they say, 2 million people are going to die unless we mitigate and shut down the economy for a couple of weeks. They said a couple of weeks. Well, it's turned into months. And some of these governors have turned it into more months. And, you know, I think we're turning a corner. I believe that, yeah, novel. It's thanks bringing it. I appreciate that. I just, you know, it's novel is what it is, right? But thanks for the assist. Now, the Federalist reported that, it was quite a while ago. This is an old article that was out on the internet that I just wanted to talk about. And Margot Cleveland of the Federalist wrote this article on April 24th, 2018. FEC records indicate Hillary Clinton campaign illegally laundered $84 million. Now, how do these stories just disappear? How do these crimes against the American taxpayers, against America, just go unsolved? I am hoping, and I hope you guys are hoping too, that, you know, next week we see some indictments, that next week we see some grand juries put together. And these people are brought to justice. And who are they? How about John O. Brennan? The guy had very little experience, and suddenly he was the head of the CIA. But he was in there as a political operative for Barack Hussein Obama. James Comey, the FBI director, who's lied and lied and lied, and he's a pretty elitist, pompous ass, if you ask me. How about Barack Obama? How about Hillary Clinton? I mean, there's a huge list of people, you know, that need to be brought up. Schiff, Nadler, all these people that fan these flames of lies. And now we got Hillary Clinton, who I think in her mind, she's going to swoop in, you know, when they finally decide that Joe Biden, who's taken too much Chinese, Russian, and Ukrainian money already, and John Kerry, who's, you know, taken too much money from Iran and China and Russia, that they're not going to be able to cut it. You know, Joe's got definite mental problems. And I think Hillary thinks she's going to swoop in. So they've got to go out there and they've got to slow Hillary down. At least that's my hope. That's my hope. And there's a lot of things that we need to look at. You know, we have cybersecurity problems. We got border problems. But our biggest problem is we have to vote these progressives out of our government. They are doing massive damage to our country in every way. In our trust, in our security, in our economy. And I think they have evil intent, just like the Chinese had evil intent with, doing these virus experiments in Wuhan. I think there's evil intent, and they have to be stopped. We have to vote as a huge block. You may have to vote, and just like I had to vote, I had to hold my nose voting for McCain. I had to hold my nose voting for Romney. Okay, but what was the alternative? If you vote for some third or fourth or fifth party guy, your vote goes nowhere. We've got to get the progressives out. We've got to vote as a bloc. We've got to pull this together. And I'm hoping that the indictments start coming, that there's some arrests, that there's some grand, at least, come on, how about some grand juries set up for these so we can decide whether to indict these people, at least have that. Well, you know, Grinnell's been busy. Richard Grinnell, the acting director of the National Intelligence, he's been really busy. Now, he announced Friday, late Friday, the creation of the Intelligence Community Cyber Executive. And he said Friday that the creation of an Intelligence Community Cyber Executive is part of other organizational changes. Now, according to the Office of Director of National Intelligence, the new position will provide, quote, a single ODNI focus point for the cyber mission, which will strengthen the IC's cyber posture to better defend U.S. national security interests. The cyber executive position will oversee four consolidated, previously separate ODNI cyber-focused organizations. The ODNI did not immediately respond to this is from The Hill, to their request for comment, on which four organizations would be combined. The creation of and they've got to do that. One of the things that Trump really does need to do, he needs to whittle this thing down, this behemoth that's been built that they call the federal government. You know, I mean, you know, the thing I remember about, you know, remember Gillibrand? You know, she was a senator from New York. Well, she was one of Obama's people. And I just remember she was really into the idea of the FBI not talking to ICE with regard to illegal aliens. And so they weren't communicating with each other, and that the FBI shouldn't be talking to the CIA. And that the CIA shouldn't be talking to the ATF, and you know, that they don't communicate. So they've created all these, you know, all these ridiculous agencies. They don't even talk to each other. They don't even share information. And, you know, I'm just absolutely amazed at what's happening. So I'm just hoping that there's some action. You know, and then the other thing we learned over this last couple of weeks is that big corporations of our meat industry, meat, you know, beef, pork, chicken, and so forth, are owned by Chinese and Brazilians. Now, Smithfield Farms is owned by a Chinese oligarch. And this oligarch was about to shut down all the meat processing when Trump told them, you know, last week, no, that the meat industry has to stay open. Now, the shuttered meat processing plants are coming back online. And here's how they're protecting the workers. This is from the Daily Caller. And this is Smithfield. Tyson Foods reopened a plant in Waterloo, Iowa, after more than 1,000 workers at the facility tested positive for coronavirus or COVID-19. Sarah Little, a representative from North American Meat Institute, told the Daily Caller News Foundation that President Donald Trump's executive order mandating reliable food supply has made a big difference in getting the plants reopened. Meat packers are placing dividers between workstations, deep cleaning facilities, and assigning so-called... You know, it's funny because the USDA is supposed to go in the... I worked in food manufacturing for years where we would make chicken soup and beef soup and different things. And the USDA would come in before every single production run and inspect the area. But I guess they're going to make it extra safe. Now, meat processing plants are slowly coming back online. And I'm glad about that because when you start thinking about rationing meat, rationing food, when you see the pictures of the farmers dumping milk because they didn't have enough customers and they're just pouring it down the drain, it makes no sense to me. It makes absolutely no sense to me. So, you know, hopefully we're going to turn this around. And I would really like to see some of these indictments and people listen. Whatever we do, November comes, stay focused. Don't listen to the crap. Stay focused. Get ready to vote in November. We got to vote the party line. We got to get rid of progressives. Then we can fine-tune the rest. Worry about the rhinos later. Worry about some of these people later. But we've got to get the progressives out. Look what they're doing to our country. Hey, you've been listening to Feldman World Review. This is Brian Irving, your host here, thanking you for tuning in. I'd like to appreciate all some of the new listeners that I got coming in. And just remember, whenever you get this link, you can listen to it anytime. And just remember, When the going gets tough, the tough keep the faith.
It's your world, I just live in it.
The number you have reached, 911, has been changed to a non-published number.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Hey, I want to thank you for listening to the May 10th podcast of Feldman World Review. This is Brian Irvin, your host here at Feldman World Review, thanking you for tuning in for all these years of support. We've been here since 2009. We arrived on the, my brother and I, was Mike and the Jew Boy at the time. We arrived here on the internet the same time President Obama walked into the White House, and we've been watching this like a hawk. So I want to appreciate you guys. I really appreciate you guys for tuning in and checking it out. And remember, we're on every Sunday, 10 p.m., and Wednesday, 10 p.m. I might be adding a day or some short shows, maybe shorter or some different shows, maybe earlier in the day as well. So look for the posts on Facebook, on Twitter, on Parler, and just remember, when the going gets tough, the tough keep the faith.